This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
President Trump upped the ante today in an attempt to get a stimulus package passed before Election Day. This while his nominee to become the next Supreme Court Justice of the United States is looking to be a sure thing. Good afternoon. I'm Pedro Echevarria. This is Washington Today. Thanks for joining us. More on the state of stimulus talks later, but first, Judge Amy Coney Barrett's Supreme Court confirmation hearings finished Thursday, concluding 4 days of hearings as Republicans mapped out a clear path to placing her on the high court before Election Day. Over the week, senators questioned Judge Barrett about her judicial philosophy and views on abortion, voting rights, the Affordable Care Act, and global warming, controversial issues that could come before the court. Judge Barrett dodged answering many inquiries that dealt with contentious issues. This was seen to frustrate Democratic senators hoping to derail her confirmation. According to USA Today, quote, Thursday's hearing started off contentious, with Democratic senators attempting to halt the hearings, an effort quashed by the Republican majority. Democrats again slammed the proceedings for being rushed in the middle of a presidential election and a global pandemic, repeating the Democratic stance that the next president should choose a justice to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the high court. Republicans vowed to move ahead with President Donald Trump's nominee. End quote. Now, to hear a little bit of what happened today, here is the chairman of the committee, Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina.
I've gotten to know the president, but I voted for somebody I really wouldn't know if they walked in the door. The bottom line is 2016 gave an outcome different than everybody in the country thought, except the people who voted for the president in the right amounts in the right states. And isn't that ironic? The American people actually get a say. And from that day forward, there's been an effort to say that election didn't happen. It's not legitimate. Donald Trump is not really the president. As much as I was disappointed that Barack Obama beat John McCain, I accepted the outcome. I voted for his nominees. There is no way you'll ever convince me that Amy Coney Barrett is not qualified using any reasonable standards of qualification. If I applied to Justice Sotomayor and Kagan the standards you're being imposed upon every Republican nominee since I've been here, I wouldn't have voted for them. Senator Leahy, to his credit, voted for Justice Roberts, and that's sort of been the end of it. So the qualification test to me seems to be dead and buried with everybody but me. And I'll have to reevaluate where I am. I want to be fair, but kind of silly to play a game nobody else is playing. Now, as to me, in August of this year, I was asked directly, what about a vacancy? I said, after Kavanaugh, there, everything's changed for me. I'm not going to sit on the sidelines and watch one of our nominees be destroyed after showing respect for two Democratic nominees. That is not right, and I'm not going to do that. As to Judge Barrett, the time periods we've talked about extensively, the same party as the president, the same party as the Senate. You know, Senator Cruz is very smart on all this stuff. I made sure you had a chance to test her. You did. And I want to compliment each member of the Democratic side for being firm but not going down the Kavanaugh road.
Chairman Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, that was from earlier today. Now, the ranking member, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, stated her disapproval with the hearing and the nomination of Judge Barrett.
This is being done without any precedent in the time, at least, I've been on this committee, which is about 25 years. And it's being done, I guess, to show power and push someone through and really abrogate the value of hearings that this committee should treasure and respect. As somebody that's been on this committee for a while, I've really come to value the hearings and the search for information and the desire to do justice to individuals. So I really don't understand why it makes a difference whether it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. It allows us to complete a process which we have put in place that has worked, I think, very well over time. And once we do this, we breach, I was going to say, the etiquette of the committee. I'm not sure etiquette is the right word, but it breaches everything that we have held dear and the processes that we have moved forward with. So I very much hope this does not happen, and there's no need for it, and it's going to create a lot of bad will that doesn't need to be created.
Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California. That was from earlier today. Now, after hearing from the American Bar Association about Judge Amy Coney Barrett's qualifications for the Supreme Court, senators heard testimony from some of Barrett's former colleagues and advocates who shed light on what her confirmation could mean to the future of health care. Members of the panel shared personal stories about Barrett's dedication and emotional anecdotes from stakeholders on the importance of the Affordable Care Act, voting rights, and a woman's right to an abortion. Speaking about Judge Barrett, here is Senator Ted Cruz of Texas.
I think it is important for the record to reflect that moving forward on this nomination is consistent with two centuries of precedent and tradition in the Senate. Numerous Democratic members of this committee have given speeches. I see they have charts prepared to give more speeches, all attacking the legitimacy of these proceedings. And as John Adams observed, facts are stubborn things. The scenario of a Supreme Court vacancy occurring during a presidential election year is not a new thing. It has occurred 29 times in our country's history. Presidents have made nominations all 29 times. The precedent is unequivocal and uniform. When a vacancy occurs in a presidential election year, the president makes a nomination. That includes Republicans, that includes Democrats. A total of 44 people have served as president of the United States. 22 of them, half, have made a Supreme Court nomination during a presidential election year. What has the Senate done? Again, the precedent is clear. Of those 29, 19 of those occurred when the president and the Senate were of the same party. Of those 19, the Senate confirmed 17 of them. The precedent is clear for a long, long time that if the president and Senate are of the same party, the Senate, in all but extraordinary circumstances, confirms that nominee. How about when the Senate and the president are of different parties? That's happened 10 times. In that circumstance, the Senate has confirmed the nominee only twice. 2016, which our friends on the Democratic side invoke, and I understand why they invoke it, they were frustrated. 2016 was one of those instances in which President Obama was a Democrat, the Senate was in control of the Republicans. They had differing views on the kind of justices that should serve on the court. And so the election resolved those views.
That was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. That was earlier today on Capitol Hill. One of the other people speaking out today, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota. She spoke about the feelings she had on the process of the nomination and the nomination moving forward.
This is a sham, and I just heard you talk about precedent. The closest precedent, which what matters to me, is what all of you said. And what you said, Mr. Chairman, and what Senator McConnell said are where he set the precedent. He said the American people should have a voice in the selection of their next Supreme Court justice. Therefore, when he was looking back at the Merrick Garland time, this vacancy should not be filled until we have a new president. This is even closer in time than that. And the best precedent that we really have is when Abraham Lincoln was president. And it was the closest in time that we have had in history to this, when a justice died closest to the election, and he waited until after the election to make the selection. And I look at the words of my colleagues in this committee, people I work with very well all the time. I look at that historical example, and I think it leads us to one end, and that is that we should allow the winner of the election to pick this nominee that we should make sure that we do this after the election and that we remember that we have literally millions and millions of people voting as we speak. You all know that. And the final thing that concerns me is that the president himself has been making it very clear why he wants this justice on the court. He said he wants nine people after the election. He says that he wants a court that's going to overturn Obamacare. He has made all of this clear. So to me, not only do you have your own precedent, not only do you have the example of Abraham Lincoln, but you have the fact that because of what this president has been saying, it undermines this process, undermines the court, and that is why we should delay. And the final word is why we are not working right now on a COVID relief package in the middle of a pandemic is the final pits about this whole process, because that's what we should be doing. That's what the American people want. 74% of them say we should be doing that instead of working on this. And I think the time has come to be honest about what's going on here. You are just trying to ram through this justice against your own words in light of everything this president has said, where he won't even commit to a peaceful transition of power.
Senator Amy Klobuchar, that from earlier today. Now it's time to hear from the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. He spoke about the pending vote before the full Senate, and he was also asked, as he was voting today back in Kentucky, if the president's nominee has the votes.
How closely have you watched the confirmation hearing, and how do you think that it's going?
Very closely. As you know, this whole business of confirming judges has been, I think, the most important thing we've done. This is an outstanding nominee. If you had a chance to watch her, she's absolutely brilliant, able to fend off all of the questions in an appropriate way for a judicial nominee. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg set the standard for what you should and shouldn't say in one of these confirmation hearings, and what you shouldn't say is how you're going to rule on anything in the future, and she stuck to that Ginsburg rule flawlessly.
When will you schedule a vote for confirmation?
Well, she'll come out. Today will be the first step. In the Judiciary Committee, any member can carry over a nominee for a week, and I'm pretty sure that'll be done today. She'll come out of committee next Thursday, the 22nd of October, and we'll go to the floor with her on Friday, the 23rd, and stay on it until we finish.
You think you have the vote?
We have the vote.
Again, that's the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. Now, turning to efforts on Capitol Hill for coronavirus relief, President Trump called Thursday for more stimulus spending than the $1.8 trillion that the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin proposed in his talks with the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, injecting yet more chaos into the unruly negotiations as the election nears.
I would, because look, this was not caused by our workers and our people. This was caused by China. And China will pay us back in one form or another. And the money's coming back anyway. I would. Absolutely, I would.
Now,
I would pay more. I would go higher.
Would you call
Go
Speaker
big or go
Pelosi?
Home. I said it yesterday. Go big or go home. But Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to give anything. She thinks it helps her with the election. And I don't think so. I think it hurts her with the election because everyone knows she's holding it up. We're not holding it up. She's holding it up.
Would you pick up the phone and call Speaker Pelosi with a higher
offer? Sure, I would. But it's, I know my people. I know life. She's got a lot of problems. She's got a lot of mental problems. And it's going to be very hard to do anything with her. She wants to wait till after the election. She thinks it hurts the Republicans. And I don't. I think it hurts them. But we're doing well. I think we're going to have a fantastic third quarter. The numbers are going to come out right before the election.
And that was President Trump. He made those comments on Fox News today. Now, for the reaction, again, from the Senate Republican leader, he was asked about the state of stimulus talks. And here's what he had to say.
Senator McConnell, you've scheduled a vote on roughly $500 billion stimulus package on Monday. Do you expect enough Senate Democrats to back that so that it has a shot at passing? And if it doesn't, what is the point of having that vote?
Well, Morgan, I hope you followed what I've been trying to do the last 2 months. I've been trying to get the Democrats to agree to do a highly targeted bill dealing with COVID-19 and where we are today. They are still insisting on upwards of $2.5 trillion grab bag of things that include tax cuts for high-income people in New York and California, such things as free health care for illegal immigrants, And by the way, the bill has more money for Puerto Rico in it than it does for Kentucky. Now, my opponent is for that bill. What we need to do is take a look at where we are in the country now. We clearly have a resurgence. The disease is not gone. We need more money in the popular PPP loan program, more money for schools, more money for health care. And so what I'll put on the floor is a highly targeted $500 billion. That's a lot of money. $500 billion program to target the actual needs that the country has. I'm not anticipating that they're going to support it, but I'm going to give them the opportunity, and we'll see.
President Trump has suggested that Congress should go big or go home with the stimulus package. So why are you proposing something that's $500 billion, as you mentioned, but it's much less than the original proposal you made?
I'm proposing what we think is appropriate. Senate Republicans, this is very similar to the vote we had about a month ago. It had everyone but one of Senate Republicans supporting it. I'm putting on the floor what we think is appropriate to tackle this dread disease at this point.
Again, that was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell earlier today in Kentucky. Secretary Mnuchin and Speaker Pelosi have negotiated for days, even though the president keeps changing what he's willing to offer, often in Twitter posts or media interviews. The Senate Majority Leader, meanwhile, is distancing himself and the Republican senators from the White House's rapidly growing spending package and attempting to advance a smaller scale $500 billion plan, which you heard the speaker talk about, or the leader talk about. Turning to coronavirus pandemic specifically, while he was on ABC's Good Morning America, Dr. Fauci talked about the impact of the virus, especially as we move into the winter season.
Well, it's quite concerning, George, because as you just mentioned, we have a baseline of daily infections at approximately 45, 50,000 per day. And then if you look at the states that you just mentioned, several of them, in well over 30, have upticks in test positivity, which has proven in the past to be a very good prediction of a surge in cases, which ultimately leads to a surge in hospitalizations. And then ultimately, in some individuals, that will obviously be an increase in deaths. The issue is that as we enter, as we are now, in the cooler season of the fall and ultimately the colder season of the winter, you don't want to be in that compromised position where your baseline daily infection is high and you are increasing as opposed to going in the other direction. So we've really got to double down on the fundamental public health measures that we talk about every single day, because they can make a difference.
You talk about doubling down. Your adult children won't be coming home for Thanksgiving this year. What should all of us be doing to prevent Thanksgiving from becoming a super spreader event?
Well, understanding that everyone has this traditional, emotional, understandable, warm feeling about the holidays and bringing a group of people, friends and family, together in the house, indoors, that's understandable. But we really have to be careful this time, and each individual family evaluate the risk-benefit of doing that, particularly when you have people coming in from out of town who may have been on airplanes in airports to just come into the house. If you have vulnerable people, the elderly or people with underlying conditions, you better consider whether you want to do that now or maybe just forestall it and just wait and say, you know, this is an unfortunate and unusual situation. I may not want to take the risk. But then it's up to the individuals and the choices they make.
The president is holding packed rallies every day. He's talking about immunity, still suggesting the virus is going to disappear. Is the president doing what he needs to do, saying what he needs to say, setting the example the country needs right now?
George, I've said it time and again, you know, I don't like to be pitted against what the president says, but it's so clear that when you have congregate settings and so many people, when you're in a situation when the community infection rate is there, you can't run away from or argue with the numbers.
And that was Dr. Anthony Fauci earlier today on Good Morning America. By the way, in referencing Dr. Fauci, the president spoke about him at his North Carolina rally, criticizing him about the advice he's given in the past on masks. But in talking about Dr. Fauci, The Washington Times reporting, quote, "But he's a nice guy, so I keep him around." This is Washington Today.
Sundays at noon Eastern Time, hear interviews with national leaders and journalist roundtables on NBC's Meet the Press, ABC's This Week, Fox News Sunday, CNN's State of the Union, and Face the Nation from CBS. All the latest issues in politics, the economy, foreign policy, and more on the Sunday Network Talk Shows on C-SPAN Radio and the free C-SPAN Radio app every Sunday at noon Eastern Time.
$61 million Americans have some form of disability, but yet we're in less than 3% of film and TV shows. And out of that, the majority of those roles are portrayed by non-disabled actors. So ultimately, as somebody with a disability, we want to see ourselves represented, because ultimately, not only are we seeing ourselves represented, but it's going to help destigmatize disability. And representation in general gets society used to everybody. And ultimately, it makes the world a more inclusive place.
Actor Nick Novicki founded the Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge in response to seeing disabilities underrepresented in front of and behind the camera. Sunday night on Q&A, he'll talk about this year's entries and winning films. Nick Novicki at 8 p.m. Eastern on C-SPAN's Q&A.
This is Washington Today. Thanks for listening. President Trump on Thursday criticized Facebook and Twitter over their decisions to limit the spread of a New York Post story that included allegations about Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. He accused the companies of seeking to help his opponent's campaign by enforcing policies that limits users' abilities to share the story. Biden's campaign has disputed portions of the article after it was published Wednesday. According to The Hill, his comments are in response to Facebook and Twitter's decisions to clamp down on the spread of the Post story, which includes claims about Joe Biden and Ukraine that hinge on emails reportedly retrieved from the hard drive of a laptop dropped off at a computer repair shop in Delaware that happened in April of 2019. An unnamed store owner who reportedly could not identify the individual who dropped off the computer is said to have provided a copy of the hard drive to an attorney for Rudy Giuliani, the former New York City mayor who now serves as the president's personal lawyer, before it was seized by the FBI. You can read more about this story at thehill.com. Here's President Trump from earlier today in Greenville, North Carolina.
From newly released emails, and I want to thank the New York Post for showing real bravery. That Joe Biden has been blatantly lying about his involvement in his son's corrupt business dealings. Joe Biden is a corrupt politician, and he has been corrupt for many years, and everybody in Washington knew it. And just now, a little while ago, a news story shows up that Hunter made a deal with a wealthy Chinese business magnate for $10 million a year for introductions only. Introductions. I don't know. Will you take $10 million a year to introduce people? Yeah, to introduce Dad. Dad, say hello. And by the way, Dad, give them everything they want, okay? Give them everything they want, Dad. Hunter also referred to another more lasting and lucrative arrangement with the same Chinese businessman that would be so much more interesting to me and my family. That's what he said. That's a quote. These deals were made at the same time Joe Biden was letting China steal your jobs and take away your factories. If Biden is elected, the United States will be owned by China. But we don't have to worry about it, because I can't believe.
That's President Trump earlier today in North Carolina. Republicans on Capitol Hill were also critical of Facebook and Twitter's actions. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey will be subpoenaed by Senate Republicans next week and questioned on why the social media company blocked two New York Post articles alleging Hunter Biden corruption while his father was vice president. Here's more on that with Senator Ted Cruz earlier today. This happened during a break in the last day of that Senate confirmation hearing process for Judge Barrett.
In the last 2 days, we've seen a remarkable development. We have seen big tech. We've seen Twitter and Facebook actively interfering in this election in a way that has no precedent in the history of our country. Yesterday, the New York Post broke a story alleging serious corruption of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden concerning Ukraine. The allegations in the New York Post story, if true, indicate that Vice President Biden lied when he said he had never discussed his son's business dealings. That story, once the New York Post broke it, was blocked by Twitter and Facebook. Anyone who attempted to share it was prevented from sharing it on Twitter or Facebook. The New York Post itself, when it attempted to put out its story, was blocked on Twitter and Facebook. The New York Post has the fourth largest circulation of any newspaper in this country. Never before have we seen active censorship of a major press publication with serious allegations of corruption of one of the two candidates for president. That was last night. This morning, the story escalated and got even worse. The New York Post broke a second story of a series of emails that indicate yet more corruption. In this instance, the Biden family receiving millions of dollars from communist China government officials. Just minutes ago, I tried to share that story on Twitter. And Twitter is actively blocking right now, this instant, stories from the New York Post alleging corruption and the Biden family receiving millions of dollars from communist China. This is election interference, and we are 19 days out from an election. It has no precedent in the history of democracy. The Senate Judiciary Committee wants to know what the hell is going on. Chairman Lindsey Graham and I have discussed this at length, and the committee today will be noticing a markup on Tuesday to issue a subpoena to Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee next Friday, to come before this committee and the American people and explain why Twitter is abusing their corporate power to silence the press and to cover up allegations of corruption. And let me be clear, I don't know if these New York Post stories are true or not. Those are questions Vice President Biden should answer. But Twitter and Facebook and big tech billionaires don't get to censor political speech and actively interfere in the election. That's what they're doing right now. And so on Tuesday, the Judiciary Committee, the full committee, will be voting on subpoenas to subpoena Jack Dorsey to come before our committee.
Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, from earlier today on Capitol Hill. One of those topics at the Supreme Court nomination confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett was the topic of climate change, and writing about it, Zoya Tierstein with the online publication Grist that deals with environmental matters. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You wrote and looked at how Judge Barrett particularly responded to those questions about climate change. Summarize what that response was.
Yeah, well, she was asked twice about the issue of climate change at her confirmation hearing. And the first time she said that she didn't have firm views on the topic. And the second time, when she was asked again, she was pressed by a Democrat this time, she kind of responded, dodging the question again, saying that, you know, she doesn't feel like she has a right to have, you know, to weigh in at this moment on it, since she doesn't know the science, she doesn't have really the data. So I would say that she sort of dodged that question a bit.
And in writing about that, here's a line from your piece. You said, Republicans have trotted out the, quote, I am not a scientist trick for years now. Let's start with why you refer to it as a trick.
Well, you know, it's a bit of a party trick, I would say, because it kind of deflects, you know, it helps them not say whether or not they actually agree that with the scientific consensus that climate change is caused by humans. And it also doesn't stick them on the side of denying it altogether. So I think that it's been used sort of to great effect in recent years by Republicans. Although I should note, and I've written about this as well, that Republicans are starting to shift away from that rhetoric and towards something a little more climate friendly.
Yeah, you wrote about that. I want to talk about that in a second. But I want to talk about how Republicans particularly have responded. Have they used the same type of technique? And are there other examples you can cite?
Yeah, I mean, Marco Rubio has, in response to a question about the age of the Earth, which is a more science-related question, has dodged and said, I'm not a scientist, man. Mitch McConnell has used that rhetoric in response to a question about climate change as well. It's sort of across the board. There's a lot of examples of that happening.
You also cited the example of the former President Barack Obama.
Oh, yes, that's true. Although he sort of views it in a different way, saying that he's not a scientist either, but he knows a lot of good scientists, and they agree that the consensus on climate change is that humans have contributed to it.
So back to Republicans generally, you had said that there was maybe a little bit of a coming around when it comes to this topic. What do you think is causing that?
I think there are three main reasons for that. I think the first is that the GOP's younger base, millennials, are starting to change their tune on this. They want their party to address climate change and rising emissions, and they're becoming a little disheartened that the party has not come up with an alternative to something like, for example, the Green New Deal, although I will note that that's changed recently. We'll get into that later if possible. The second thing is that the visible effects of climate change have really, come to bear recently. People can see fires and hurricanes, and it's all becoming a lot more visceral. And then the last reason really is the popularity, the surprising popularity of the Green New Deal, which is this progressive proposal to bring down emissions and achieve a more equitable society. It was popularized by AOC. And so at first, Republicans were very skeptical of that plan. They still are, but it's comparative popularity, it has kind of shocked them into action a bit.
Do you think when it comes to room for debate about climate change, it's more about, or it's less about what causes it and more about, well, what can we do about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely true. I think that at this point, we've kind of come to that. There's sort of a limited amount of time to address this issue. And so both sides of the aisle are sort of thinking about solutions now.
When it comes to Judge Barrett, a couple of questions about her. So when it comes to the topic of climate change, why do you think it's important for a possible Supreme Court justice to know and at least be cognizant on these issues?
So there's a case that is coming to the Supreme Court soon. Baltimore is basically suing a bunch of oil companies for their contributions to climate change. And oil companies want that case removed to federal court. Now, the details here are a little tricky, so I'm not really going to get into the nitty-gritty because it will be here all day. But basically, the Supreme Court is going to hear a small procedural issue with that case that could have implications for other similar climate liability lawsuits that are currently happening across the country. And so it's important for Supreme Court justice to understand some of the science behind climate change and that humans have contributed to it significantly. In my opinion, I think that's an important thing.
This is Zoya Tierstein with the publication Grist. And Zoya Tierstein, if people wanted to read your work and some other work of yours, how can they find you online?
Oh, they can find me on Twitter, Zoya Tierstein, Z Tierstein, and you can go to grist.org for our coverage.
The piece is Amy Coney Barrett isn't a scientist, but she might be a climate denier. Zoya Tierstein, the author for Grist, thanks for giving us your time.
Thank you.
That's it for our program today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, Washington Today is available as a podcast. You can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a good evening.